Derek and Meredith get their happily ever after. Christina meets a man who says so, and the chief gets steamed about the hospital's new rankings. We're here with the inside scoop on all that and more in our first official podcast for season 5 of Grey's Anatomy. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Last night's two-hour premiere was chock-full of dreams. Here to tell us who had the most realistic dreams are executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers. They'll also tease the next episode, Here Comes the Flood, which airs Thursday, October 9th from 9 to 10 p.m. on ABC, or the next day at abc.com. Here now are Shonda and Betsy.
Hi, I'm Betsy.
I'm Shonda.
And this is Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy.
We're back.
Season 5.
It's been a little while. We took a little break to try to get some more episodes going here, which
yes.
I think successfully you've been doing, which
We've
is
been
great.
Making episodes.
We got through the summer. Wasn't too bad. Wasn't too hot.
It was okay.
It was actually seasonal.
Yeah. At least, we did have an earthquake, though.
We did.
It was a small one.
Kind of earthquakeette, but not so bad, you know, and that was actually reminded us that we live in Southern California where earthquakes might happen.
Exactly.
But not like some of the moving and shaking that's been happening over here, right?
That was the worst segue ever.
We're a little out of practice because we haven't done this in like 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah, it's
which
been
is
a while.
Just, this is just like watching us crash and burn, which is much more exciting,
yeah,
right?
We promise nothing. Greatness.
Yeah, that's probably true, but just happy to be alive.
Yes. By now you've seen this week's episode, which is called Dream a Little Dream of Me.
Which was two powerhouse hours of entertainment.
Two very, very long hours of entertainment. We packed a lot into that episode.
And I think actually what's interesting from this perspective is you knew what this episode was even before we stopped shooting last season.
Yeah, I knew what this episode was while I was writing the finale of last season.
She kept saying, I have this idea, and it's a fairy tale. It's the other side of the fairy tale.
Yeah, it's what happens after you get your happily ever after. Because, I mean, Meredith and Derek couldn't just ride off into the sunset and that'd be it. I mean, the show'd be over.
Or stay in that field for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, but I did think that there was something about, you know, what happens when your dream comes true in a lot of ways. What comes after that. I thought that was interesting.
And I think that's what was great about, because you also very, very early on seemed to have the idea of the princesses and the fantasies, which
yes.
were the two things.
I was very obsessed with the princesses. And originally, like, they were much closer to the Disney princesses than they were almost anything else. Like, one was Snow White, one was Cinderella, one was Belle. Like, we had a whole thing. And as it grew and changed and morphed and became different, obviously it grew and changed and morphed and became different. But
the essence was still the same. Because in essence what you had was you had three women going to a ball whose pumpkin crashed for all intents and purposes.
Exactly. That's very deep.
Thank you, see that theory.
Yeah, that makes you sound deeper. And what happens to them after they've had their happily ever afters with their Prince Charmings.
And also, what I really, really love is the whole, this episode so much to me is about, the core of it is about friendship and the definition of friendship.
Yes.
And what's the next stage of friendship? Because everybody talks about the happily ever after for couples, but I think nobody really deals as much with the thing I love about this, which is what happens to the friends after the happily ever after?
Exactly.
Which is also reflected with the princesses and the realization that one of them actually has been sleeping with the other one's husband.
Which is great, yeah.
And yet they managed to heal, which is the big thing about having an amazingly close friend.
Yeah, I always have this thing when Betty can't remember anything and is sort of perpetually stuck in this one moment. For me, it was like, it had more than one level, which was, you know, it had the heartbreaking level of she's never going to, you know, understand what happened to her husband and she's going to be constantly living in this state of grief. But on the other hand, her memory is short. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know.
Her
exactly
memory
what you
mean. Is short, which is sort of what has to happen to Sarah Beth and Bernadette Peters and Kathy Baker in order for them to heal their friendship and move on.
I know the whole opening of them arriving in this ice storm, which I found like really both weird, mysterious, and poetic and strange that this car comes skidding up with these women in these phenomenal ball gowns.
I really wanted to do an ice storm, even though I knew like, okay, it's going to be October. So I had this whole thing about global warming, A, and B, I thought like it would be really cool to do an ice storm because I've never seen that. And in Seattle, an ice storm would be interesting. And, well, you know, I had something I wanted to do with an icicle, so.
Well, which very early on, I remember you said, I'm going to impale Christina with an icicle.
And when, was sort of like,
when it sounds
what?
Like that, you think, really? Really? Yeah. Seriously? The really, really fun part actually being here, and you know, we bring up weather as a joke to begin with, but the episode is about an ice storm, and we do live in Southern California. The challenge of creating an ice storm in Southern California was actually
kind of unbelievable.
Incredibly entertaining and strange. And kudos to Shoots Without a Script, Rob Korn, who of course directed this double episode, and the incredible team of people that we have actually working here in production, because they actually frostbit the whole area where the ambulance bay, and did this incredible thing, which to me really, really looks, being from the East Coast and you being from the Midwest, really, really looks authentic.
And then we did some amazing special effects on shots that were just perfect, lovely summer days in L.A. that we then turned into wintry days in L.A., you know, in Seattle, which were kind of amazing
for
as
this
well.
Incredible freak storm, which is great. Now, I think also just in terms of on the fairy tale topic, a very odd kind of Prince Charming walks in the door, which is one of my favorite things ever in the history of the damn show.
Owen Hunt.
Owen Hunt, who, by the way, saucy and spicy. But also, more importantly, really doesn't give a crap what anybody thinks.
When I remember pitching the character to the studio and the network, and everybody was like, so what kind of guy is he? I'm like, well, he just walks around and says, so... a lot.
And there was this long pause.
And everyone was sort of like, what does that mean?
Exactly.
And I was like, he doesn't care. He just is so, and he does whatever he wants. It's awesome.
Which, in fact...
And the writers became obsessed with it. And the first draft of the script, I think...
He maybe had two other words.
Owen said so like 50 times. And so he had to pull back a little bit on the so's and use them sparingly.
You actually finally gave him a sentence, which was great.
Yeah, exactly.
Relatively early on. But initially, it was also this monosyllabic grunting of so.
I think Kevin McKidd, who plays Owen Hunt, could... grunt anything he'd want and we'd all be fine
with it. And I gotta say, we were big fans of Kevin McKidd's. I mean, we had followed him in Journeyman, we saw him in Rome, we knew about him from Trainspotting, and we were kind of freaked out that we actually got to work with him and that he was willing to play this part, but he dug into it like a crazy man.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
It's really, really wonderful.
He takes it very seriously.
And I don't know about you, but there was heat between
Christina and Owen. There's a little bit of heat. I really loved their whole storyline. I thought that there was something really lovely about he's injured and he staples himself and then she's injured and he carries her inside. Like, it just was really great. And he pulls out her icicle. The whole relationship to me was really great. And I love how what it culminates in, which is that wonderful, amazing kiss, which I adore.
Which is great. And it's also, finally, it's great to see someone stand up to Christina. Not in the Erica Hahn way of standing up professionally, but like... this guy...
He felt like a formidable opponent.
He does. And I think one of the things when you first were talking about this was the idea of somebody who is a formidable opponent, not only for Christina, but for everyone at Seattle Grace.
Yeah, because, for Derek.
And
for Mark.
And for McSteamy. Because, I mean, Sloan is like, they're both like, what the hell are you doing? You're marching through here and you're doing
all this crap. Which I love. It's just a very different energy than the hospital has seen before, which I'm excited about.
I think it's really, really cool. And
I thought it was very interesting to see him do this part.
I really love that Christina's karmic icicle when she yells at her best friend. She gets an icicle through her heart.
I love that Christina basically gets to say the thing that I have been thinking, frankly, and I know that lots of people have been thinking for a long time, which is shut up about your relationship with Derek.
Just stop it. Just please, please don't say any more about this thing.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a relief just to have everyone come out and say it. I think the other, obviously the big thing, which to me is going to affect the season gigantically, is the idea that Seattle Grace, which we started with way, way back in 1928 or whenever we first started working on the show, we started with the idea of this hospital being an incredibly...
like one of the best.
One of the best. Elegant, fabulous. That we start the season and this hospital has slipped so precipitously. I mean...
yeah, I love that.
And how much harder everybody's going to have to work to...
That was really important to me, to start the season off with the idea that they are playing catch up suddenly, that all of the arrogance that they have about sort of their hospital is sort of thrown in their faces when their ranking slips, not to 4 or 5, but to 12, which I thought was really hard and difficult for them to deal with and would be hard for the chief. And I love that he says that they've gotten complacent and that people have become lazy. And it all culminates in him saying that the surgical training program is officially changing. And that was really interesting because you know that something big is coming.
Which is going to be incredibly fun to watch. I also love watching the chief viciously overreact Like, the chief doesn't measure his reactions, which I love.
The chief does not like to lose.
You know, he doesn't, man. And he turns into
like
steam coming out of his head.
Yeah.
Which is, on one hand, the chief is one of the most rational, great bosses in the world. On the other hand, one of the things I love about the chief is sometimes not the most reliable boss.
He's just as competitive as our residents are, which is what I think is interesting.
Exactly. And you never lose that.
Yeah, he never lost that drive. He's still that competitive guy, which I thought was really interesting.
I think, like, Alex is in a really... The relationship with Alex and Izzy seems to be in a really, really interesting place, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Alex, the fact that she told anybody anything about what had gone on between them in the finale of last season when he sort of cried and was more than he could take. For him, there's no forgiving that. I think that that was a very interesting place for them to be.
Absolutely. And
he's making out with Skanks at the end of the episode. I mean,
which, if you're gonna...
no offense to the Skanks out there.
By the way, we're not anti-Skank.
No,
that's
love
not
you.
The issue.
Love like, every last one
you know,
of you.
If the world needs Skank stuff. So there you go. But I think, in truth, for Izzy, that's
pretty
mortifying.
For Izzy,
it
was a little bit mortifying. And for Alex, you know, it's a little bit of a backslide.
Okay, so the dream sequences. I just love the Meredith Christina one.
The
for
old
all
ladies,
the personal reasons that are obvious.
I have a huge... I mean, for me, that was my favorite. I love the one where Meredith, you know, thinks that Derek is dead. Well, we see that Derek is dead. Because it always made me cry because it always felt so real to me.
I think it's...
And
yeah.
It was really shocking the first time I saw it. I started
crying.
Yeah, I knew what happened next. And still I was like, Derek's dead. Oh, my God. So that was really hard. And I love, of course, Izzy's at the end, her dream sequence. But I think that Christina's is the most honest and pure and sort of non-romantic and practical. And yet incredibly charming and speaks to the nature of what's important to her and what friendship means to her. The idea that there'll be two 90-year-old women
routing around cereal boxes, like in
cutting chicken
in their
like
kitchen.
Like, that's her dream, which I found to be incredibly sweet and charming.
Well, it's that it's so based in reality, and that it circles back to me to the whole idea of what the
episode's really
about. And
dreams don't always have to involve a boy, ladies.
Okay, so they can sometimes just hanging out with your good friend eating chicken.
Exactly.
Is sometimes a good thing, even though you can't see and you're a little shaky, but you're still kind of grouchy, which I really, really liked. The two surgeons are actually eating chicken.
And they looked really good. I mean, I feel like their old age makeup was incredible.
I didn't recognize them.
Like, it was, I saw them on set and I remember thinking, like, why did we bring in two actors?
I thought we were actually
going to
do prosthetics.
And then Sandra opened her mouth and I was like, oh my God, they have the most amazing makeup on. That was, the Bermans were incredible for that.
Which actually did an amazing job. Yeah. Absolutely. So it was a nice way to start.
Yeah.
But next week, actually, I think connects really, really well with this week.
We're going to see a little bit more about, you know, what's going down with Erica and Callie.
I think, yep, that's that was an awkward way to end the season. And I think they've got to work out where the heck their brains are on that one.
I think they're gonna have an interesting place to go. I love that they have that moment where they both discover that they're both kind of virgins.
And yeah. Also means that actually, as we move forward with this, it's being handled in a different kind of way than I've seen, which is two people actually don't have any clue what they're doing.
Which I love.
Which, as opposed to a highly confident human being dealing with not a very confident human being.
Exactly.
Both kind of lost in the woods, which I think is terrific.
Yeah. Next week's episode is called Here Comes the Flood.
I believe in 2 weeks you're going to be saying Here Comes the Flood because the fine people of this country are going to be watching a presidential debate.
Debating. Which I think is important, and you should all be watching that too.
You should. And
also voting.
Voting's also good, but evaluating your opinions based on
what you
the
see
points
in
the debate.
Voting. Don't vote based on clothes or looks or
hairdo.
Hair.
Or what your favorite movie is.
No.
You know, because sometimes that's not a good thing.
Watch the debate.
But debating's good because issues will come up and everybody will have feelings about
that. And if you're not registered to vote, register to vote right now so that you can vote.
So that's our public service announcement for getting out the vote there, which is good.
Voting. It's for you.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, just for the record, it gets you out of the house. You might meet somebody. Never know who you're going to meet at the polling place.
That is where all the cute guys are.
They are. They're hanging out, thinking about voting.
Place.
Not necessarily
your
getting coffee.
Your own personal McDreaming.
Might just be standing there with the little punch card or the chat or whatever the heck people do in different states.
I don't know what they do.
I don't either. But if you see them with that little sticker that says, I voted.
That means they're hot.
Chase them.
That means they're
chase
hot.
Them like a cougar. Exactly. So clearly we should hang this
we
up
should
now.
Stop talking
because,
now.
Because we're done. So I'm Betsy.
I'm Shonda.
And this is Grey's Anatomy.
That's it for this podcast. We'll be back next time with another inside look at Grey's Anatomy. You can catch Here Comes the Flood on Thursday, October 9th at 9 p.m. on ABC or the next day at abc.com.